It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
This week on Valley Edition, we are going to do something different. We are going to interview Elizabeth Ripley, President and CEO of Mat-Su Health Foundation. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Hello, Mike. It's Elizabeth Ripley with the Mat-Su Health Foundation. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm looking forward to this opportunity to catch up, see where you and the foundation are going. We have spoken many times in the past, and right now we're in what appears to be a slightly different circumstance. We've come off some violent winds, a lot of power outages, and we're into yet another form of COVID. How would you say the Health Foundation is doing with these dramatic events?
Thanks for asking, Mike. Yeah, it's been a really interesting 2 years, hasn't it? And we're really in starting year three of what I think a lot of folks would hope would have been over a long time ago. I think that we're resilient here at the Mat-Su Health Foundation. I think that we see resilience across our community. We are all adapting to kind of a new normal. You know, we experienced remote work for the first time, and now we've kind of normalized more remote work at the Health Foundation, not exclusively, but, you know, it's become normal, and we've tried to take advantage of the virtual technology and the things that has allowed us to do. And then in other cases that, you know, has significant limitations, we have staff that live in different parts of the borough. We have staff that have children in the school system, which has really been hit hard by the COVID and the windstorms, and prior to that, the earthquake. And so just really try to be mindful about what our employees were going through, what their families were going through, what other employers and their families were going through, what our community was going through, and try to lean in and be positive this whole time. Highlight where we see really amazing work happening, like the the school district health advisory committee. We awarded them with the Burt Hall Award this past June because of all the work they've done to keep our children and teachers safe while moving to in-person school. We've highlighted groups across the community by providing lunch hugs once a week, where we see like amazing things happening. We deliver lunch and thank you notes. There is, again, tremendous resilience, and there are people leaning in, whether it's through delivery or social connection or keeping our schools open, that are doing really extraordinary work in the face of these adversities. And so we celebrate them, and we've tried to keep that kind of that focus and that perspective going through these strange times.
So maybe we could parcel out a little bit the difference. I am familiar, many of our listeners are familiar with the Health Foundation's advocacy programs, certainly supporting many, many other efforts in the Valley. Also a lot of planning and getting people together. I'm curious in this particular case, how you can describe this, what I feel are extraordinary times that keep changing. This most recent version of COVID, Omicron, has recently seen an incredible spike, and yet it's coming at a time when people are somewhat tired of the whole thing and being asked to return to perhaps ways of dealing with mitigation that they had said, yeah, we did that, but now we're going to have to do it again. How can the Health Foundation help with that marathon-like effort that we seem to be involved in?
Well, I do think that over the course of the pandemic, the Health Foundation, we did shift somewhat in our public relations we stepped up, I think, to play what I hope is a really positive role for the community in sharing accurate information, in framing the context of whether it be, you know, vaccinations or masking or what have you, to keep our community safe. We actually use the methods that we rely on, which is really about data, right? Science and data. And our work is always rooted in strong science and good data. And we also root our work in community. We root our work in the voices and stories of our community members, and we surface those. And so really we took that same approach to the to the pandemic and even in our public relations. So one example would be, you know, there's a lot of polling that happens where we collect data on health status, for instance, historically, but also on people's perceptions related to, for instance, who do people find credible in this space on talking about vaccinations or masks, and where are MATSU residents getting their information, and so we made sure that in some of these surveys that took place that we didn't do, that other entities like the State Department of Health and Social Services did, we made sure that there was an oversample of MATSU residents. And we paid for that to make sure that MATSU voices were really strong in those surveys, and that we had valid and reliable, we had a significant sample of MATSU residents surveyed, so we'd have more valid and reliable information and data that we could then elevate those voices of MATSU. And we could hear where MATSU wanted to get their information or how they wanted to get it. And then we could follow that. So, and then whose voices did they find credible in this space? Who did they want to hear for? We could make sure that those voices were in, for instance, our public relations campaign. So that's kind of an example of using the methods that we've always relied on and making sure that that work is rooted in science data and also rooted in community and community voice.
Well, I appreciate that. That, I think, is very helpful to show us how we are going from, it's a little bit like the windstorms or preparation for emergencies. In the past, what we've managed to do is to do emergency expos, for example, and do a lot of planning for emergencies. And then we come down to having wildfires, floods, winds, whatever. And then you're faced with, the reality is, do I have power? Do I have a generator? Do I have heat, et cetera? And I'm feeling that in some respects, the pandemic, and I know we're focusing on that a lot, but the pandemic has been an extraordinary thing that is both very personal, if your family happens to have four or five members and three of them come down with COVID. And you're saying, okay, what do I do at that time? Yeah.
Yeah, and I would like to just respond to that, Mike. I think that I hope that we learn from the pandemic. It wasn't like any natural disaster we'd ever experienced, and our systems are prepared for a wildfire. Our systems are prepared for an earthquake. Even our response systems, our emergency and crisis systems, are even on the food security side, we are ready for wildfires and earthquakes. Our systems were not prepared or adequate or ready for a pandemic. My entire health career, I have heard that a pandemic was imminent. It was only a matter of when, never a matter of if.
Right.
And everyone seems so surprised, even in the healthcare community, that this was happening. And none of our systems were adequately resourced or prepared, from public health, which over the entire course of my career we have defunded, both at the national level and at state level, but also our crisis response systems, even as simple as those around food that work for a wildfire and shelter, but don't work for a pandemic. And there was, frankly, a reluctance of folks to change and adapt. over time, of course, we did. But there was this sense of like, well, we don't do pandemics. Well, who does do pandemics? Because we're in one. We all have to figure out what's our role in the pandemic. And somebody said to me, actually, it was Lori Wolf, who's the CEO of the 4-Acre Group. She said, we're all swimming in this COVID sea. We are all participating in the pandemic, right?
Right.
It's our reality, but we're all in different boats. And our boats are all different in that respect. And and some of our boats are more at risk than others. And so we have this commonality. The pandemic has forged really a context that's universal across our globe in a significant way. And I would hope over time that would cause us to unite and come together to combat this common enemy and scourge rather than be divisive.
Right.
And I think that we've tried in all of our messaging to, in fact, we have a PSA out right now focusing on come together.
Right. Well, my sense of things is that there is a considerable difference of opinion, I can put it that way. I've seen this expressed, people talking, well, about vaccinations, about whether COVID is really more than the flu and so on. Do you see us finding a way to have some agreed upon approaches here from what you have discerned in the surveying and contacting a variety of people to move to that point that perhaps decades ago when people were dealing with polio or measles vaccines or so on did not seem to have this difference, significant difference of opinion?
I mean, I'm hopeful over time that we will see our way through this. We have... I think that, you know, we're learning a lot about our values. Matt Sue, for instance, has the lowest rate of childhood vaccination in the state, which has the lowest vaccination rate in the country for children under the age of 5. That's a really big problem. And so it's not really surprising that carries over on the COVID front to the lowest vaccination rate in the state for COVID vaccine as well. So, and there's a lot of misinformation out there about childhood vaccines and out there about the COVID vaccines, and it is misleading people. People are being misled. One of the things that I think I've learned through the course of this, through very specific incidents, we as human beings have a huge need to belong, to be connected. Right now, across our country, it is more important to identify your belonging and your identity than it is to... That takes precedent over even following good science or factual information. It's more important to identify with a certain group. That's how important belonging is. I don't want to lose that piece. How important belonging is. And we know from all the research we've done at the Matsu Health Foundation, whether it's on a specific demographic like seniors or families with young children, or whether it's on a specific issue like mental health or substance use or housing, we hear over and over in all of our research that people in Matsu are lonely. They're not as connected as they would like to be. They want to be more connected. And so how do we do that? And yet they're fiercely independent, right?
Right.
Fiercely independent and self-determined, more so than probably most places in the country, right?
Right.
And they're lonely and want to be more connected and want a sense of belonging. And the divisiveness in this issue presented a chance to belong in a different kind of way.
Right.
And it was more important to belong and to have identity with a group of people and social connection, even if it was virtual or through all the media or whatever, like social media. It was more important to belong than it was to actually protect oneself based on good science.
Mike Malevsky here at Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska, and I'm speaking with Elizabeth Ripley, the Chief Executive Officer of Matsu Health Foundation. Elizabeth, there are some details about the Health Foundation we've launched into a good discussion, and maybe there are a few listeners out there that may not know just what is the Matsu Health Foundation, and you could enlighten them a little bit here.
Sure, happy to do that, Mike. Thank you. The Matsu Health Foundation is the original Valley Hospital Association that ran the old Valley Hospital in Palmer. We were incorporated in 1948 to rebuild the Valley Hospital, which had burned down at the time, and really wanted to have, you know, a new a hospital that would grow and continue to meet the needs of the Matsu community. We needed to reinvent ourselves some years ago and build Matsu Regional Medical Center. And so to do that, we entered into an LLC partnership with a outside company and built to bring in the capital to build Matsu Regional Medical Center. We seat half the governing board of our local hospital, the Matsu Health Foundation does, as does, and then our partner seats half the governing board. And so a huge focus of our work is really making sure, again, that our acute care hospital continues to grow to meet the needs of the fastest growing population in the state. An example of that would be we really pushed and advocated and were able to have the hospital open a behavioral health wing to serve the mental health and substance use acute care needs in our population. And that was those needs were lifted up by community and by data, as an example. And a result of that work was opening a wing at Matsu Regional that could much more properly care for folks that present with those issues to our hospital. We are doing business under the name Matsu Health Foundation, but we are the original and incorporated as Valley Hospital Association. We take our share of the profits of Matsu Regional Medical Center. We technically own 35% of the hospital. We take our share of those profits and we reinvest them back into the community in grants and scholarships. And our goal with those investments is to measurably improve the health of the population, of the Matsu population, at the population level.
Right. Now, in some cases, that involves funding, for example, grants of varying sorts. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yes, so we have a number of different grant programs. We have Target Wellness, which are below $15,000, and Healthy Impact, which are above $15,000. People can go to our website, healthymatsu.org, and apply anytime. It's a rolling application. It's open all the time. Apply their 501c3 public charity can apply for funding. We do also fund tribes and government. And so those entities can all apply through, there's a portal on our website, again, healthymatsu.org, apply with their ideas to implement projects that improve the health of the community. And that it doesn't have to be that those projects serve every member of the Matsu community. It may serve a certain demographic, like older adults. It may address a specific issue, like after-school programming for kids. It may address a specific issue like substance use disorder, for instance. But this is a place where there's funding for those organizations and these good ideas that can make us healthier overall. We do, as I said, we're very data-driven, and so we do research, and we try to understand the issue or the demographic and the story. And we try to tell that story. So, for instance, we've done two what we call senior scans, two reports on the health status of our older adults in our community and how those systems work or don't work that serve them. And then we will often issue, when we issue a report, we'll often attach funding to that report and issue what we call a discovery grant. And agencies can apply to address the findings and recommendations in the report. And so, again, it's really about sort of understanding our story and knowing the issues and the challenges and also what's working well and what we can celebrate and uplift in those spaces. So we do a lot. We do a lot of research, and what we find is people change how they act in the story. We interview people who are in these systems serving our community, and they read the report and they change their behavior and they help make the system better, so it works better for Mat-Su residents. And we just have so many wonderful examples of that happening in our community, from transportation to housing to the crisis response system to senior services to child welfare. Like, there's a lot to celebrate because people in the community are helping to create the change so the systems work better for Mat-Su residents and so they become healthier.
And I've been fascinated by the website Connect Mat-Su, which is a extension of the Health Foundation that allows, it's really a resource hub, as I view it.
Yes, actually, that also came out of our research. In all of our reports, it didn't matter, again, if we were focusing on a specific demographic or we were focusing on a specific issue or problem, people told us they didn't know where to get help. It was just universal in every research project. People said, we don't know where to get meaningful assistance to help us with these challenges. And so, you know, we looked out there, and this had come up for years, almost my entire career here in Mat-Su, and there had been significant efforts to address this over time. I was part early on of what was called Mat-Su Info. And Mat-Su Info rolled into AK Info, and AK Info became 211, which is universal really across the country now and run by United Way of Anchorage for the state of Alaska. And it still was not sufficient despite all those efforts. And so we launched Connect Mat-Su, and it's one of the hardest things there is to do out there, to actually do effective information and referral where people get meaningful referrals directly applicable to their situation for which there's some kind of resource or they have resource to either purchase or get and help them solve their challenges. And to say that out loud, it's just so much harder than it sounds. And so Connect Mat-Su has networked a number of different information referral hubs together, from the Aging Disability Resource Center to Links Parent Resource Center to Help Me Grow, which does early childhood referral information, and then really provides a portal both on the web, phone, you can go to, and also walk-in. We take walk-in here at the Mat-Su Health Foundation building on Cruzy and Wasilla. And we help people get referred to what they really need. And we find people walk in the door or they call, they have one presenting kind of crisis-related issue. And as we learn about that issue, we find there's four or five significant issues underlying that crisis issue that need to be addressed. So it's complicated. But we have a brilliant director in Ashley Peltier, and she is leading Connect and has assembled a brilliant team, and they are almost doubling their referrals monthly at this point, Mike.
Wow, impressive.
Really quite extraordinary.
Mike Malevsky with Big Cabbage Radio once again in Palmer, Alaska, and I've been talking with Elizabeth Ripley. And Elizabeth, we have a couple minutes left. What last sharing do you want to do with our listeners before we do finish?
Thanks, Mike. There's one thing I definitely want to talk about, which is our 2022 academic scholarships are open. So they opened at the beginning of January, and health jobs in healthcare are the fastest growing sector of jobs in our economy, and they have been the fastest growing sector of jobs for decades at this point. Healthcare jobs provide living wages, and those are the kind of jobs we want to build in the Mat-Su economy, jobs that allow people to pay for their families and their housing and their food security, and allow them to really participate in community. And so once a year we open, we put out a call for applicants for our academic scholarship program. And these can be used for higher education in the fields of health, for human services, like social work, for example, or nonprofit management at accredited colleges and universities. And, one of the things that we know about health at the population level, Mike, is that the top two determinants of health at the population level are education level, having some college, and income. And so, in these investments in scholarships that lead to living wage jobs and produce higher income for people directly affects the health of the population, of the Matsu population. As I mentioned, we are, we co-own Matsu Regional Medical Center. We live in the fastest growing population in the state. We have a lot of healthcare needs that aren't being met because the workforce isn't here. And of course, we can recruit some of this workforce, but we also need to grow this workforce. We need people who love living in Alaska, living in Matsu, serving our residents. And so we invest heavily in trying to get people in this pipeline to these healthcare jobs. And we have the data and the research to support this as well. We, besides new healthcare jobs, we are not producing enough healthcare workforce to replace those who are going to retire in the next 10 years, let alone all the increased growth that's happening. So we have our work cut out for us. This is one of the ways we plug that issue. And we've increased our scholarship funding from $10,000 when I started to $1.7 million in academic scholarships that were awarded last year to 419 Matsu residents. And individual awards range from $500 to $7,000. So now's the time to apply. If you're interested in a career in healthcare, you want to go back to college, you want to pursue this career, the deadline to apply is February 28th, 2022. Again, you apply at healthymatsu.org. If you're not interested in academic scholarships, year-round, we offer vocational scholarships. And we try to double the number of those every year that we give out. And we give all kinds of scholarships out, whether it's for people going to school for phlebotomy or medical assisting or massage therapy. Quite a range of vocational scholarships are awarded. We will pay for people to sit for their CNA license. We'll pay the licensure fee.
Wow.
That's bad. We need direct service workers who are CNAs and properly trained working in our community. EMTs, for instance, going to school to get the EMT certification, our vocational scholarships will pay for that, and that's open year-round. But this academic scholarship is only open from now till February 28th, 2022. For this round, and they will be awarded in May for the fall 2022 semester. So really invite everyone to visit healthymatsu.org and apply for one of our academic scholarships to pursue a healthcare career.
Elizabeth, I want to thank you very much. That last was inspiring, and I'm hoping that we'll help people respond. So once again, thank you very much. Stay healthy.
Thank you. You too, Mike. You take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.